everyone. Welcome to Advanced Radio, where we are going to be discussing our literature article and reading and how important reading is and where you can find interesting and good books to read. I have two readers in the audience or in the studio with me today.
Hi, Linda. I'm also Linda, Linda C., and I'm glad to be here.
It's nice to have you with us, Linda.
Thank you.
Do you like to read?
I do. Well, when I can find time, because it seems like it's hard to do that. But I do love to read when I have the time.
And?
I'm Simon, and I'm usually not here for literature articles, but it's nice to be here because I am a reader.
Yes, you are. What's the last thing that you read?
This last weekend, I read a book about Chinese history in China. It's like a work of fiction.
Okay, so kind of historical fiction.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about that before the program started. And Linda, you also like to read historical fiction.
I do, and I just finished a book that is also historical fiction. It is on the history of the island of Taiwan. Well, a partial history.
Oh, interesting. And I'm also reading, the book I'm presently reading is called The Shadow of the Silk Road. I think it's factual and also some fiction involved with it. So we all like to read, and actually I found this article quite interesting because sometimes it's hard to know what to read.
That's true.
And where to find it and how to find good books to read. So this article that we're going to be discussing today is going to kind of give us some ideas of where to look, of where to get ideas of what to read. So why don't we start with our reading? And we are on page 38 of your Advanced magazine. If you have it with you, you might want to turn to it. And we are going to read this first little section down to about line 13.
Finding your next awesome read. BookTrib.com reveals where to find good books, from bestseller lists to forums. When you read as much as we do, it can be hard to find a good new book. There are so many reads out there that it's easy to be overwhelmed by all of the possibilities, often leading to a disappointing choice or wasted money and time. We're here to make the process just a little bit easier. We've rounded up some tips that we use personally in our search for books to fall in love with. Here are 5 tips to find your next awesome read.
So we're going to be talking about where and how to find your next awesome read. And before we start, we have a new member of our studio today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. My name is Jack Smith, and I'm so glad to join you today.
And do you like to read, Jack?
I do.
What I asked them, so I'll have to ask you, what's the last thing you read?
Oh, wow. Well, I read a lot of books for school right now.
Okay. Oh, yes. Okay. Well, we see here that they are going to be introducing 5 tips to find our next awesome read. But before we start, do you like to read paper or do you like to read on a digital device?
I read paper still. Actually, I don't read on a digital device.
Ever?
Well, I don't have one.
Oh, okay. Then you don't. How about you, Jack?
Same, yeah.
Paper?
I like to hold the book.
I read on both, yeah.
And which do you have a preference?
I read different kinds of books on different platforms or formats. So I tend to read novels and easier reading in digital and stuff that's more reference book or nonfiction stuff in paper.
I read both as well. I prefer to read lighter. If I'm going to read on my Kindle, I want to read something lighter. And you're right, if it's more reference or kind of heavier reading, I read in paperback. But it also depends upon if I hear of something and if I can find it here. Sometimes I can't find it here, so I put it on my Kindle.
I think the main reason for that is that I read on the go lighter works of fiction. So like if I'm waiting in line, I read a couple of pages of a novel.
Yeah.
Like on my phone. Whereas if it's sort of a heavier topic, it's much harder to process the information in, you know, 30 seconds in the line. So I try to avoid that.
Well, actually, I have a couple of books I put on my Kindle that I really, it's something that I really wanted to learn about. And I read like part, started part of one. I was like, I can't, you know, it's really hard to reference back to something that they're referring to later on in the book. So it's, for, I found it quite difficult to get through, actually.
And there's just something about holding a paper book in your hand and flipping the pages. There's just something that, yeah, I like about that. And I also get to give my eyes a break from looking at screens all day long.
Yeah.
So that's good for my eyes.
Well, how do we know? You know, it says in our article says here that there are so many good reads out there that it's easy to be overwhelmed by all the possibilities. If you feel overwhelmed by something, what kind of feeling is that?
That just means it's too much of something, so you don't know what to think about it or you don't know what to do. You're sort of frozen in a place where you can't decide what to do. And that's actually what they're talking about here. When you're overwhelmed by possibilities, it basically means you don't know which one to choose. Because
right.
there are so many choices, mm-hmm. you just can't decide.
And I like the description. It says leading perhaps to a disappointing choice or wasted money and time. I have felt that way before. Anybody else?
That's pretty common with books, right? Because you get a very short preview of what the book's going to be like. And if you're reading about a certain topic and you kind of get interested in the topic and you read other books in the topic, you'll find that, you know, not all books are created equal, right? Even coming from the same author. So.
Yeah. Well, I always, everybody makes fun of me for doing this, but if I'm going to buy a book, I often read the last page. If it's historical fiction, if it's fiction, actually for most books, if I can, and I read like a page in the middle, and if I don't like what I'm reading, after I've read the first page or a couple pages of the book, then I don't buy it. If I don't like the ending.
Honestly, that's one of the reasons I read lighter stuff on basically digital format, because they
so
tend to be
can't.
Cheaper. Well,
what?
It's cheaper.
Yeah,
so
it is.
If you make a mistake, you don't really waste too much money. Whereas if you buy something a little thicker that's nonfiction, like you could be throwing a lot of money away if you buy the wrong book without having a chance to look through it first, I guess.
And I can't figure out how to read the ending on my Kindle and go back to the beginning. So, hey, that saved me from reading the end a lot. Well, it says here that this article is here to make the process of choosing books a little bit easier, so they have rounded up some tips. And if they have rounded up something, this is kind of an interesting use. What have they done? Jack, how do you read this sentence?
Well, to round up something is basically to find all of the best options and to collect it for you so that it's very easy to see and so that you don't have an overwhelming choice.
Okay. So here, this is what they personally do when they're searching for books. I love this, to fall in love with. Before we go on, has anybody, what book have you fallen in love with? Any in particular?
Cryptonomicon by Neal Stephenson.
Okay.
And basically everything Neal Stephenson's written. Yeah.
Should I ask you what that's about?
Sure. It's, he is like a historical fiction writer, but with a sort of a science fiction leaning, and it's a very sort of realistic science fiction. So we're not talking about spaceships and stuff. It tends to focus on economics and secret codes and history.
Okay, so what's the name again in case anybody wants to buy that book?
I mean, these books are like 1,000 pages long. It's called Cryptonomicon.
Okay. Yeah. How about you, Jack? Do you have one that you love?
Yeah, you know, I really like C.S. Lewis mm-hmm. as an author. And one of his lesser known works is he has three books that are actually science fiction, and I really like his science fiction trilogy.
Yeah, I love that one too. I read that a long, 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 long time ago. I loved it.
And what are they called?
The first one is called Out mm-hmm. of the Silent Planet, and the second is called Paralandra, and the third one is called That Hideous Strength.
Yes, they're very, very good. How about you, Linda?
My favorite classics too, anything by Jane Austen.
Oh,
I love.
Yes. And I think my all-time favorite book is by a contemporary of C.S. Lewis, by George MacDonald. He actually had a huge influence on C.S. Lewis's writing. And my favorite book by him is called Lilith.
Wow, I love that one too.
And, yeah, I love it. I just loaned, you can't It's very hard to find that book now. I just loaned it to somebody on threat of death of getting it back. Well, we are now going to take a look at, today we're going to look at two tips to help us find our next awesome read, and tomorrow we'll talk about three more. So let's read our first suggestion.
One, bestseller lists. If you're looking for a popular current read, then bestseller lists are a great place to start. Usually, there's a reason that a book ends up on one of these lists, guaranteeing a high-quality read, or at least an interesting experience. There are always the classic lists to consult, like the New York Times or USA Today, which are both reliable and steadfast. We also like to check out the Amazon bestsellers regularly. Their lists are broken down into more specific genres, giving you even more options if you're a picky reader, or if you're looking for something more niche, like the current bestsellers in medical thrillers or women's friendship fiction. Because it's Amazon, there are always a lot of self-published and more affordable titles on there as well.
So our first suggestion here, our tip, is the bestseller list. Have you ever read anything off a bestseller list?
I have, yeah. I'll use the New York Times bestseller list to choose something.
Okay. Have you ever been disappointed?
No.
Okay. Good. How about you, Jack? Have you ever used a bestseller list?
You know, I don't think I have, actually.
How about you, Simon?
Yes, but just to qualify that, you see here it says bestseller lists, because there's actually usually more than one bestseller list. Frequently, like, they'll break them down into different categories, like teen fiction, historical fiction, romance, whatever different categories. And so I do use bestseller lists, but I tend not to use, like, the top 10 bestseller list.
Why not?
Well, I'll use, like, more specialized bestseller lists.
Oh, for certain genre you're looking at, and that's one of our words here. But right before we started, you were saying that for the New York Times bestseller list, there's been kind of a scandal with it.
Yeah, I don't want to be quoted on the New York Times part because I can't remember exactly whose bestseller list it was, but it was one of the famous ones. Mm-hmm. Relatively recently, there was a scandal about teen fiction, where sort of an unheard-of author ended up at the top of the bestseller list without the book ever having really been reviewed, because on some of these specialized lists, bestseller sort of suggests maybe 100,000 books have sold or something, but that's not actually the case. The numbers tend to be much lower because, you know, how many teen fiction books are going to sell in the average week, right? So basically it's able... Publishers are able to sort of manipulate the numbers in such a way that they ensure a placement on the lists.
Okay. So some of this you need to look more carefully at, I think. Actually, if you go into a bookstore, especially in the States, if you go into a bookstore, they have them numbered by which one is, you know, like usually 1 through 10, you know, so you can at least look at those if you're looking for what's popular, that people are reading.
Right. And I would do some research before choosing that book, even though it's on the bestseller list. You still want to find a little bit more about it and maybe read some reviews on your own and then decide if you want to read it.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one of the nice things about a bestseller list is actually the information that comes with it, because the organizations they mention here are the New York Times and USA Today, which are both newspapers, but both of them have big literary sections. So they have a lot of book reviews, for example, that you can read, and you can check out more information before you decide.
Yeah, they usually do that on Sundays, I think. I remember, like, the paper version of the paper, newspaper, has, like, an insert with reviews, book reviews on Sunday. So, well, we see here that this is, the article suggests that there is a good reason that books end up here, and this is a great place to start if you want to start reading. And these are considered the classic lists that Simon just mentioned, New York Times or USA Today. And it says that they are both reliable and steadfast. Usually we talk about a person being steadfast. And what quality is that?
That they're consistent, that they don't change quickly or they don't change, like they don't have any sudden changes. They're pretty consistent throughout.
And in that case, in this case, I guess, it just means it's always there, right? So,
mm-hmm. And probably the quality is the same, the same quality of judging for all the books that they're suggesting.
Yeah.
And also it says that they recommend you check out Amazon bestsellers regularly. And why would this be, Simon?
Well, I guess because probably most people these days buy the majority of their books through online services like Amazon. Especially if you're getting English books and you're in more remote locations, Amazon is a very convenient way to get books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I also like it. This is very true. It's very helpful if you don't know what you want to read. It says that their lists are broken down into more specific genres. And if you're looking at a genre, what are you looking at, Jack?
Well, a genre basically is a category where in it you're going to have things of the same style.
Okay. So if you want to read, as we were all saying, historical fiction, it can break down into that category or genre, and you can look there for that specific kind of book.
Right. And some other genres might include romance, mystery, adventure, mm-hmm. Autobiography, biographies, fantasy.
They get very specialized here, though, the ones they mentioned.
Like I know.
Medical thrillers and women's friendship fiction.
Mm-hmm. I know. So. I was like, really?
Yeah, and I mean, literally, those are books about women that are friends, and they are not true books.
They're
right?
not true?
But
oh,
they're
yeah, fiction,
fiction, right?
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah, fiction.
I mean, you've got a whole set of books that are, you know, fall into this category.
Well, here they're using another word. It's not category. It says if you're a picky reader, are you looking for something more niche, then what is that particular word? It's what Simon was just describing. If you're looking for a niche, what are you looking at?
Well, it's just a very small, specialized category.
Okay. So then they give these two examples. Okay, so we have this word at the bottom of the page. It says, if you are a picky reader, what does that mean? Do you consider yourselves picky readers?
Yeah.
So, again, because I don't want to waste my time since mm-hmm. I don't have that much time to read. I want it to be something that I'll really enjoy or learn from.
Okay, so what does this word, if you see this, usually we think of picky as being negative. I mean, right. We can, in your instance, we could say it's discerning, okay?
Exactly.
But if you say, use this word, a picky reader, what does it bring to mind? Jack, what do you think of?
Well, I think of someone who's very selective. They're choosing carefully. They're not just going to pick up anything and start reading it. They're going to be very thorough about thinking what they want to read.
Okay. Where do we often see this word associated?
With eaters.
Yeah, with eaters. Very picky eaters, especially children. Okay, we usually tell our kids don't be so picky. Also about clothing, I think, but usually it's about eaters.
Yeah, they tend to have strong likes and dislikes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, we see here that we're talking about Amazon, and because it's Amazon, there are always a lot of self-published and more affordable titles on there as well. So I think it's self-published is a specialized term, but it's also very, it really kind of explains itself. But what does this mean?
Well, it basically means that a writer has written a book and published it by themselves. So that means less these days than it did once when books were all printed on paper. Because at that time, if you wanted to have a book made, you basically had to find someone who would print it for you. The alternative was self-publishing, which meant you paid the money to have the books made for you. But that was a much riskier thing to do in the days before digital books. And that's why Amazon has so many, because they have that Kindle platform. So people can write a book, make it into an e-book, and they don't have to take the risk associated with printing, you know, 1,000 copies of that
right.
book and then trying to sell them to bookstores.
So it's not as costly.
And you know, this is something I actually really appreciate about Amazon, because so if a book is self-published, you might not be able to tell whether it's going to be a good book or not. But I've had some books assigned for school that were self-published and they were on Amazon and they were really excellent. And that's, you know, obviously the person was not able to get the book published, but I'm glad they were able to get it out there somehow.
Okay. Yeah, so they're positive, and, well, hopefully for the publisher and for the writer, it's very positive. And then we have one more that we want to look at today. We've looked at bestseller lists, and now we're going to look at book clubs. So we are on the right-hand column, starting at about line 7.
Two, book clubs. Maybe you're already part of a local book club, so you know how great they can be in terms of introducing you to new books you might not discover on your own. But there are also tons of online book clubs you can join, giving you an even wider access to some awesome reads. Some of these book clubs are celebrity-run, like Oprah's Book Club 2.0 or Emma Watson's Feminist Book Club, Our Shared Shelf.
So has anybody here ever been a part of a book club?
I have. I've actually run a book club.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great
experience. Were you the organizer or the kind of the discussion leader?
A little of both. Little of both, yeah.
And what did you think?
It was a good experience, but it's not an experience I do regularly.
Okay. Did you do it here or back in Canada?
I've done it here in Taipei. And I guess the thing is, it's actually a lot of work, the mm-hmm. book club. And so I might throw this in as a recommendation at the end of this section. I have a recommendation for people
okay.
who want to get involved in book clubs. I'll throw it in.
Okay.
Later,
okay.
Yeah.
How about you, Jack? Have you ever been a member of a book club?
No, I haven't.
Linda?
I have, but it was very short-lived. When you ask the question, like, have I? But I think I have, yeah. But I wasn't in it for very long, or it didn't last very long.
Oh, the book club didn't?
Yeah, not because it was bad, just because I think time restraints.
I think that's a big problem for a lot of people now is time. And, you know, this is actually a leisure activity for a lot of people, unless you're in school. So, you know, it's kind of the first thing to go in our busy lives. But we see here that if you're part of a local book club, you know how great they can be in terms of introducing you to new books. So we have this phrase here, in terms of, and what does it actually mean, Simon?
Well, it's basically a way of referring to a way that something happens. And so here it says, you know how great they can be at introducing you to new books.
Okay.
So by way of introducing you to new books.
Okay. And these new books might be something that you wouldn't discover on your own because you don't read in that area or that field.
Right. So you can learn about books.
Did you find that when you were a part of a book club? Do you remember?
I think we were reading a book that was pretty popular.
Okay. And it also says there, I didn't know this, but there are tons of online book clubs you can join, which can give you a wider access to awesome reads. I'm not quite sure how this would work. You know, to me, I thought book clubs were like for a discussion.
Well, let's lay out my tip now, because
okay.
this is a good time. You've heard that Linda C. had a bad example that was short-lived. And I think actually probably most book clubs end up that way. Because what people don't realize is how much work goes into sort of organizing and running a book club. Like, there are certain things that have to happen for a book club to work well. Like, the leader has to have read the book before everybody else gets the book, which means the leader has to read the book several times, right, which takes a lot of time. People have to have done the reading before they come to the book club. If they haven't prepared their readings, they just show up, then nobody has anything to discuss and it doesn't work very well. You have to have people committed to coming sort of every week. And so in my experience, the most successful book clubs are basically clubs where people have a reason to be coming together anyway. So maybe you do it within a class setting or among coworkers, like your office organizes a book club, something like that. Those tend to be a little easier organizationally. But other than that, what I would say is you have to pay to play. And it's just a phrase that means nothing comes for free, right? And so if you want someone to read ahead and prepare questions on a book, you shouldn't expect to be able to just sort of show up and consume it for free. And so there probably will be a catch to all of these things if it's a good book club. And you sort of see that. You mentioned these online book clubs. How do those work? Well, some of them might be run by a publisher. Some of them might be run by something like, you know, Oprah had this famous book club where it was connected to her show, but it was part of bringing people in to be part of her audience and connecting them.
And actually, she's mentioned as an example down here, she's mentioned under celebrity-run book clubs like Oprah's Book Club 2.0, and that is exactly what you just described. She often talks about books on her show, and she promotes books that to bring people together, and also Emma Watson. And she's known, well, she is a UN representative of women's rights, and she is known for her feminist book club, Our Shared Shelf. And this book club is particular toward feminism. She's a feminist. And what does this word mean?
So a feminist is someone who supports women's equal rights.
Okay. And she's quite well known for this as well. So actually I went and took a look at her book list, and a lot of them have a lot to do with feminism. And some of them look quite interesting. Well, we hope that this is giving you a short introduction into where to find ideas or to get some ideas about some books that you might be interested in reading. And tomorrow we're going to look at three more tips in areas that you might want to be interested in looking at. So we hope you'll join us again then. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye. Goodbye.